And welcome to the show. It is Wednesday. We are grading your trades later on in the show. Adam Azer with Heath Cummings and Scott White. You know, we're supposed to have Chris Towers on the podcast, but he is still homesick. So everybody send your get well notes to Chris. Guys, we have Lance McCullers, who had a really nice start yesterday. Clayton Richard, 8 scoreless innings at the Dodgers. We got some lineup stuff to talk about. Cam Berjosian, the save. Ryan Dole, the blown save. What a fun... Actually, you know what? I'm not going to lie. It wasn't that fun of a Tuesday. I'm thinking Wednesday will be better.
You didn't spend enough time in Miller Park yesterday, because that was fun.
I didn't. You're right. I didn't go on the slide.
Yeah.
And I didn't see Travis Shaw hitting 2 more doubles, and his manager, Craig Counsell, saying he deserves to play against lefties. You must be excited about that.
I'm very excited about that. I can hardly hold my excitement in.
This morning, I had to decide who I liked better. Actually, was responding to an email from a listener, Travis Shaw or Adrian Gonzalez. Where are you? How are you feeling about that?
Adrian Gonzalez doesn't get to hit at Miller Park.
It's still Gonzalez, right?
I think I actually my rest of season rankings that I updated yesterday still have Gonzalez 1 spot ahead of Shaw at first base.
Okay, Scott. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Adam.
Let's just get into it. Let's talk standouts. Let's talk Tuesday standouts.
Who stood out? I like it.
Give me a guy. Who stood out to you?
Carlos Carrasco, I think, got the biggest star for me because all those concerns we had about his elbow suddenly seem very insignificant with the kind of start he had. 7 strikeouts and 5 2/3 to run baseball.
12 swinging strikes.
He looked like Carlos Carrasco should look.
Does anybody have velocity on Carlos Carrasco? Because I was watching that start, and the home run he gave up to Joey Gallo was a fastball. Gallo hit it like 450 feet.
The data I found looked like it was incomplete, but the average fastball velocity was pretty much what we're used to seeing from Carrasco.
All right, now that's interesting. Actually, we have something about velocity. I've been getting a lot of tweets and emails about the velocity this year is being tracked differently than it was in the past, and it's registering higher. So if you see someone who's down in velocity, it's actually, well, anyone is, I mean, it compared to last year, if they're down in velocity, they're down even more than you realize, because a new way of measuring, but we'll get to that. Carrasco, you know, really didn't look good. If you just saw after the first 2 innings, he gave up 2 runs, and then he settled in. His off-speed pitches apparently were very good, according to, I think it was Francona who said that. All right, so that star, that's the big star for Scott. Heath, big star for you yesterday.
Besides Travis Shaw, right? Like, we don't want to just talk about him nonstop.
I mean, look, honestly, you can. He's off to a great start with 4 doubles, and like I said, Craig Counsell saying Shaw has earned the right to play against regular playing time against lefties. So it's big.
Yeah, I think it is. Eric Thames was actually the one that didn't get the start, and the really surprising part, Hernan Perez didn't get the start. I thought they'd put Perez at third, move Shaw to first. They did that later in the game. Then Perez went 0-for-3 with 2 strikeouts and misplayed a ball at third base. So I'm a little worried about his situation, because I was thinking he was probably going to play, what, an average of 3.5-4 times per week? And it's early. We'll see. Maybe he still will, but not off to a great start.
It's tough to know what playing time is all about right now. Like, Delino DeShields didn't play again. He's probably going to play today. But we think the managers are just being kind of nice right now, right? Hey, everybody gets a turn.
Everybody needs to feel involved. You're all part of the team. Yeah. Go ahead and get out there. You know, we're going to start you today, and then not again for 3 weeks. But you know, go ahead and get your feet wet.
All right, hey,
couple other guys on the Giants: Eduardo Nunez, Joe Panik, Brandon Crawford, all 3 off to good starts.
You know who was nasty yesterday? Lance McCullers was nasty. 6 innings, 5 hits. I think 3 of them were infield singles. 1 run, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts against Seattle. He's still pretty much a 2-pitch pitcher. He's working on his changeup. I think he threw a little bit of it last night. I was watching a lot of this one. He was awesome. Good start for him. I don't know.
Yeah, he threw his curveball like 60% of the time, which is how the usage he had last year. That led to a big increase in strikeouts. It also led to a big increase in walks, but only 2 walks in this first start, I think, is the most encouraging of all the stats for him.
Yeah. Jacoby Jones is 30% owned. Gerardo Parra is 36% owned. Jones homered, three runs batted in. He stole a base. Parra had a bases clearing double. He drove in three. So again, Jones 30% owned. Parra 36% owned. Who would you rather own?
I'm going to say Parra because I think he's going to be the most helpful over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I don't believe that either of these guys are really anywhere close to long-term solutions. So I'll take Parra just because I think he's going to help me the most right now.
I think Parra could be. We've talked about before, you know, he was paid last offseason to be an everyday player for the Rockies and then had a horrible season, like worst season of his career, even though he was at Coors Field, had a high ankle sprain, blah, blah, blah. Great spring, and now he's off to, a 5-for-8 start or something like that?
Yes.
So, I mean, he's not a big total accumulator, like home runs, steals. It's hard to justify him in roto leagues for that reason, but he doesn't strike out a lot. He should get extra base hits, especially at Coors Field once he starts playing there.
And he's going to have a lot of RBI opportunities if he's sitting behind Cargo, yeah. Arenado's story. I will say the Rockies broadcast last night was kind of telling a story about him about how he kind of took exception to the idea that David Dahl was the team's starting left fielder, and everybody just thought that coming in, and in a good way, not like in a sour way, but just really worked his tail off to prove that he was still the left fielder.
And don't get me wrong, I'm rooting against him. David Dahl is better. But, Parra, I think, could be very useful here. Jones, not so much. Jones' minor league numbers are pretty yucky.
I thought he had some pretty good minor league numbers.
He had a couple decent power seasons early on, didn't show much power last year, and the strikeout-to-walk ratio was just abysmal.
It's just tough to trust a guy that relies so heavily on special teams production. Right, yeah. Really a big part of
how many times do we get to use that that joke?
I'm going
to
guess just a couple more because he probably won't be starting.
Did you see the that's the thing about Jones is that he homered off Quintana yesterday, homered off a lefty, and he's much better against lefties than righties. We'll see if Jones can hit righties. Did you see the Braves broadcast, I think last year? Somebody sent me the clip. It is unbelievable. They think that Jacoby Jones, the outfielder, maybe I don't know if he was playing third base at the time, is the same guy as Jacoby Jones, the kick returner. And they're doing this broadcast talking about, well, you know, Tim Tebow is trying to do this, but here's Jacoby Jones who's already made the transition, this and that. And then about a minute into this whole spiel, they realize it's a different guy. It's amazing. Find it online. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, my God.
Scott is not amused at you taking shots at the Braves.
Well, no. I mean, if they were, you know, not just goofing around, which broadcasters tend to do.
No, no. It was.
I didn't see it, so you know, I take your word for it. They deserve to be shamed for that, sure.
If you Google search Jacoby Jones Braves broadcast, there's a lot of people that don't think they were goofing around.
Yeah. Chip Carey and Joe Simpson. Oh my God! You just Google it. It's really classic. Thank you to whoever tweeted that to me. I think the last standout I want to talk about for now, and we'll talk plenty more. Ryan Dahl with the blown save. I guess apparently Santiago Casilla was unavailable, so we'll talk about the bullpens. Was Clayton Richard? Clayton Kershaw. He had 8 scoreless innings, 5 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts at the Dodgers. Clayton Richard will have one of the worst whips basically you've ever seen from a starting pitcher. But this was a good start for him, and he's a lefty, and the Dodgers were awful against lefties last year, and they're 0-for-1 this year. Any interest in picking up Richard, who is very, very unowned?
I think there couldn't be a more head-to-head, like points league-specific pitcher than Clayton Richard, because doesn't get strikeouts, but generally pitches deep into games. And such an extreme ground ball guy that, you know, he tends to avoid the big innings, doesn't give up a lot of runs relative to the whip. I still think, you know, I'm not ready to pick him up yet after this start, but while it's probably just a flat no in categories leagues, there is something to monitor here, especially since he's relief pitcher eligible. There's something to monitor in points leagues.
Hey, by the way, would you drop Hernan Perez for Gerardo Parra?
If it's somebody I'm stashing on my bench and not using, then I don't think I would. If it's a league where you don't have hardly any bench spots and you're actually needing to play somebody, then yes.
Perez, there's a good chance Perez, the majority of leagues where he's owned, are ones where he was drafted because, oh crap, I don't have enough stolen bases. Here's a guy who had 30 or whatever last year. I don't think Gerardo Parra is going to have a big steals total. So if that's what you need Perez for, it doesn't seem like a smart move yet.
All right, let's find out what the listeners are thinking right now. We'll read some emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. More emails later in the show. This is from Joe from New York, who is one of our most dedicated listeners. He and I exchanged some emails this morning. Very cool guy. His wife is about to give birth to his fifth child. So, wow, busy guy. You need to give a lot more love to Ryan Healy, he puts in caps. Healy, by the way, homered yesterday. Since last year, I predicted this guy to be a superstar. Bold prediction, Ryan Healy finishes in the top five in third baseman, cracking 31 dongs with a .288 batting average. Nolan Arenado, Chris Bryant, Manny Machado, Josh Donaldson, Ryan Healy.
I'm not sure .288 batting average and 31 dongs would crack the top five at third base, but it wouldn't be far off. I think there's a non-zero chance of this happening. Oh. Sure, I think the biggest knock on Healy right now is just that he wasn't the most hyped prospect to begin with, and he has very little track record at the major league level. And you know, it's not like he's this peripheral darling. The strikeout and walk ratio was pretty meh last year, but he showed good power this spring. Already has a home run this year. I would not hesitate to call him a sleeper at all.
Did you say non-zero to like mock Heath and Chris, or did you say non-zero because you were being serious there?
No, I was being serious. Oh, I think
I don't
maybe non-zero is actually understating it, because normally when you say non-zero, you're talking just like this smidgen of a chance, right?
Yeah.
There's more than a non-zero chance. There might be like a 2-5% chance Ryan Healy can do this.
Well, I'm very anti-non-zero. I cringe when we say it. But Heath, I'm sorry, did you want to weigh in on Ryan Healy?
I don't know that I believe that he can hit the 31 dongs and have the .280 average. He hit .305 last year, but that was with a .352 BABIP. If he sells out for power, I think you're probably going to see that crash down to the .260 range. I think it's more likely that he hits around .280 with maybe 21 dongs.
Yeah, it's a tough park. So if he's hitting that many fly balls,
right,
it would, you know, fly balls are the kind of batted balls that most result in outs. They also are the ones that most result in home runs. Big park is not the ideal environment for them.
One last thing on this email here. So Joe is currently, because he does this every night, listening to us in bed with his pregnant wife. Is there anything you would like to say to them while they lie in bed?
I'm not sure where to go with this.
Want to sing them like a lullaby or something, or just okay? I just want to throw that out there.
Heath really seems like he's suffering.
Yeah, Heath. I've never seen that look on Heath's face. Very, very uncomfortable right now. But we just got a little romantic here on Fantasy Baseball today.
That look on my face was the first time you've ever seen me think something and not say it. So
I have a hard time believing that. Let's go to the bullpen. Greg Holland got his second save. That's cool. We usually don't get a lot of saves from Rockies relievers, but Greg Holland's got two.
Amazing.
Did he?
He looked like the first save, not impressive. Wasn't really that great. This save, he looked like Greg Holland.
Are you sure that's not just because there were two strikeouts in this one and there was like the walk?
Well,
in the first
two strikeouts. Yes, I do think the fact that he walked one and struck out zero in the first save and walk zero and struck out two in the second save. Okay. Made the second save better.
All right. He did have a good strikeout rate in spring training also. It seems like his velocity is still a tick down from his Royals prime, but I think you were saying the secondary pitch for him is...
Yes. The splitter?
It's just a real bat misser.
It was phenomenal last night. Glorious.
Ryan Dahl was not phenomenal yesterday. Ryan Dahl might be my favorite one in the A's bullpen, actually, but He gave up the 3-run homer. He blew it. He came in with a 2-run lead, and the Angels ended up winning the game by 1. Ryan Madsen worked a scoreless 8th, and as I read this morning, Casilla was unavailable. I don't know why. I didn't think he threw that many pitches the night before. But yeah, like,
look at that.
I'll check it out right now, but give me your take.
I feel like this is the reason why bullpen by committee don't usually last, because the manager gets so tired of explaining himself when things go wrong. Things will go wrong. And if you're going with a different pitcher than the one who got the save the night before, it looks especially bad when they do go wrong. So even though I think Ryan Dull, he's not going to have too many outings like this one. I think eventually, as with every other bullpen situation, seemingly, that starts out as a by committee situation, the Athletics will settle on a guy, and it'll probably be either Madsen or Casilla.
Two things. One, at least the ninth inning wasn't Dull. Two.
Oh, jeez.
He only threw 15 pitches.
I'm a little bit worried. Like, if they're really going to do this with Ryan Madsen, he's our best reliever, we're going to pitch him against the best hitters. It seems to me you've only got about a 33% chance of the best hitters coming up in the ninth inning as opposed to the seventh or eighth. That doesn't really bode well for Ryan Madsen's save chances, right?
He would have to just be the best one, which is
positive. Right, but no, they think he is the best one. They just want to use him when the best hitters are coming up in the late innings.
Oh, yeah,
that's
so
not going to happen.
They've
in
done
the ninth
that
regularly.
Twice.
If they stick with that, is right. What I'm saying. I'm skeptical they will. I mean,
well, I think what makes the most sense is if they think that, use Madsen whenever the best hitters are coming up, and use Santiago Casilla as your closer unless Madsen's pitching the ninth.
Well, when's the last time you actually saw a team stick with a closing committee from start to finish?
I'm not calling it a committee anymore.
Okay.
Dole's out. Doolittle's whatever. It's Madsen pitches against the best hitters.
Madsen is the Andrew Miller of the Athletics bullpen.
Usually the
saying.
Ninth, maybe slightly more often, but yes.
So okay. Casilla would be your favorite, it sounds like, Heath.
If in that situation, yes.
All right, Cam Bedrosian, 72% owned. He got the save. Andrew Bailey pitched a scoreless 8th. Now, when Bailey pitched, it was not set up to be a save situation. It became one in the 9th. But here's an email from Brian in Los Angeles. Would you rather have Santiago Casilla or one of the other A's closers, or Neftali Feliz?
Feliz.
I'm going to say Feliz for now.
Okay. We got a tweet from Owen. Owen wants us to consider Jake Barrett as a potential closer in waiting in Arizona. Barrett's currently on the DL, but working his way back. He had a 3.49 ERA and a 1.26 whip as a rookie. But, they seem to like him. Jake Barrett, do you think that could be a guy to stash right now?
I mean, they tried him last year. It didn't go well. I don't know. He may, just because they don't find anyone better sooner. He may get that chance if Rodney continues to blow it. But I don't think he's a long-term answer either. If they're in the hunt, they'll trade for an actual closer.
I'm not going to stash him, but I do expect he will get saved at some point.
Let me just tell you before we get onto the news and notes and the lineups and stuff like that. Let me just tell you a couple things. Very disappointed in Patrick Corbin yesterday. He is one more start away from being dropped. And disappointed, not like completely discouraged, but I just don't know how I feel about Sean Manaea. He was one of my least favorite draft picks in our podcast points league. And he had basically one bad inning yesterday, but wasn't a great start against the Angels. Those two guys really bummed me out last night, Patrick Corbin and Sean Manaea.
I don't know that Manaea did anything that should really change anybody's opinion of him, whatever they had coming into the season. And Corbin, we knew, was kind of a reclamation project, so his start was clearly worse than Manaea's. But there were some encouraging signs this spring, and that stint he had in the bullpen late last year was very good. I think it's, particularly if it's a situation where you value Corbin's relief pitcher eligibility, I think you got to give him at least one more start.
Yeah, that's what I said, like one more start. But
right.
But he was awful. I mean, two of the runs that Corbin gave up came on a broken bat blooper. But he also got lucky, like two doubles off the wall could have been home runs. And then Pence nearly doubled like two more runs home, but it was caught on a sliding cat. Like Corbin was terrible.
Bad start, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, hey, listen, Baseball is back, people, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. Oh, and you can save $20 on your first purchase with our promo code FANTASY. So again, use the code FANTASY, all caps, when you buy tickets on SeatGeek. Trust me, it's awesome. I use SeatGeek every time I need tickets now, every time. I don't even bother looking at multiple ticket sites to find the best prices like I used to, because SeatGeek does all that work for me. It saves me time. It saves me money. You need to start using SeatGeek. Download the app right now. And every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It's not just sports either. SeatGeek also has plenty of concert tickets. Third Eye Blind, here we come. Comedy and theater tickets available as well. So take advantage of this offer. Get $20 off your first purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY. In caps, all caps, FANTASY. Promo code's FANTASY for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So have you guys seen this, been aware of this new Velocity thing?
Yes, I have seen it. And it kind of makes me just want to ignore all Velocity data for a while, which is probably not the best approach, but it really clouds things for sure.
So Velocity is being, the way I heard it yesterday on the Yankees broadcast was that they're using StatCast now across the board instead of pitch effects. Is that your what your understanding is?
Yeah, and it measures the point, the flight of the baseball out of a pitcher's hand. StatCast measures it earlier than pitch effects did, and so that makes it register what, you know, based on the study Fangraphs did, what appears to be about a mile per hour higher than what PitchFX did.
Wow. That's a lot.
That makes sense. A big difference, right? It kind of like, do we know how hard any pitcher throws? Like, did we know in the first place? Like, a mile per hour makes a big difference.
Yeah. And it just makes you wonder, like somebody brought up Zach Greinke. One of our emailers brought up Zach Greinke. There was a Fangraphs article about Zach Greinke, and Greinke's velocity was like close to last year, but a little bit down. But if everybody's velocity is supposed to be up, isn't that kind of concerning with Greinke?
Yeah, because it's more than just a little bit down, if that's the case.
Right.
I also know that it seems like almost every game I've watched, at some point during the game, they've apologized because the stadium radar is not working properly and they don't currently have any velocity.
So it's not just me. I was watching like no miles per hour for Wainwright yesterday for a while, and almost like three or four games I noticed that. Carrasco, too.
The stadium radar gun isn't the same as the StatCast.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't
which I don't
so
know
either.
Why the stadium would not be using the same thing that MLB is using.
Right. Well, that's why I'm not saying it with confidence. I understood it
wasn't. I'm not
saying
for sure that it's not now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of skepticism.
This
right
sucks.
Now
this sucks. I don't like it.
It will all, we'll get a couple weeks down the road and we'll feel better about everything.
Right. I mean, it is worth noting that, velocities for pitchers can fluctuate a couple miles per hour just from start to start. It happens. So we're still talking a small sample size with this, like we are with everything else.
Did you see what people are calling the worst pitch in baseball history last night?
I did not, but that would be
Adam Wainwright.
I'm skeptical, that's true, but go ahead and tell me about it.
Adam Wainwright.
You didn't see the pitch?
No, I didn't, but there have been a lot of pitches thrown in MLB history.
Yeah, it'd be tough to be worse.
I mean, this has got to have
it. Tied for the worst? There could be something as bad as it?
Yeah.
But this was 50 Cent. It was basically 50 Cent first pitch. He just spiked it into the ground, and it went way off to the left, the right of Yadier Molina. Wainwright said that he did it to protect Molina from injury, that Molina was setting up, I think, for a fastball or for a curveball, and he was throwing a fastball. He didn't want to hit him and hurt Molina, so he just spiked it into the ground, basically. It was crazy.
What I'm curious about, and I'm not discounting what Wainwright said. I mean, he's obviously been around a long, long time. How does he know that Molina's setting up for a curveball?
I think he said something about where he was placing his glove.
That's amazing.
Buy it, I suppose. But the bottom line is, more importantly, Wainwright actually did pretty well yesterday. 11 swinging strikes. He did okay. 5 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts against the Cubs. And Wainwright's owned in 94% of leagues. He was only started in 66% of leagues. I'm sure a lot of fantasy owners saw a start against the Cubs and said, no thanks. But
Wainwright
did well.
That was good process.
It was. Yeah, it was much better than I expected him to be, the way, based on the way his spring went. And I mean, he's a guy, I just feel like he's very open with the media, so you get a lot of rationalization from him that there's just a higher quantity of rationalization, which makes it harder to believe what he says when it doesn't pan out the way you expect. Like, I feel like we went through this with him a lot last year, coming back from that Achilles surgery. And, you know, he talked about his legs not having enough strength and, you know, changing his delivery. And it didn't seem like anything made that big of difference. But he talked a lot this spring about how he's going to throw a changeup more. He had rediscovered his old curveball grip from watching an instructional video he made a couple years ago, and, you know, giving us reasons for optimism and then going out and stinking it up. So, you know, veterans stink in spring training. Veteran pitchers do all the time because they're just not that concerned with the results. But obviously, after the year Wainwright just had, we read more into it than that. And I'm not saying this one start, you know, throws it all out. Throws our skepticism out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, how droppable would he be for you if there was somebody? Because, like, let's just what we thought of Wainwright. Like, I don't think any of us drafted a lot of Adam Wainwright, and he had a 4.62 ERA last year, 161 Ks, and 198 and two thirds, and had a good stretch kind of in the middle of the year, but just wasn't good. And so, you know, Wainwright is 94% owned. I felt like somebody in every draft probably had to draft him, but. Not us. And if there's somebody over the weekend or today or tomorrow, whatever, that has a great start, or a hitter that does something that you really want to pick up, does this start? And I also, by the way, I saw some 92s on the radar gun on the broadcast from Wainwright yesterday, but I have no idea what it means anymore. Is Wainwright a guy that is a must keep at this point? Like, you cannot drop him in anything deeper than a 10-team league?
I guess that was kind of my long. That was what I was building up to with that long-winded explanation, is that this start combined with the narrative he was spinning this spring is enough reason for optimism. And I'm still a skeptic overall, but there's enough optimism there that I want to hold on for a start or two more at least.
All right, let's do your news and notes here. Steven Matz may not be back until mid-May, and Seth Lugo has a partially torn UCL. They think he can avoid Tommy John, but man... Are you nervous if you're a Syndergaard or DeGrom owner right now?
Oh, absolutely. The Mets definitely got stock in PRP.
Corey Kluber expected to start Sunday. Felix Hernandez also expected to start this weekend. Denard Span took him one game, and he's hurt. He missed yesterday. Dodgers leadoff, or Giants leadoff hitter, missed yesterday's game with a sore hip. He's day-to-day. Gorkys Hernandez led off and drove in four runs in a win at the Diamondbacks. Justin Upton left with a knee contusion. He's day-to-day. They say it's not serious. Tyler Collins replaced him. Steven Piscotty had the worst luck ever yesterday. He gets hit by a pitch on one elbow. He advances to second on a wild pitch and gets hit on the other elbow on the throw to second. And then he's coming home and he gets hit in the head by a Javier Baez throw, and that may have concussed him. Let's hope not. But Piscotty is day-to-day with a head contusion. Matt Adams ended up going to the outfield to replace Piscotty. Junior Guerra could miss 6 weeks with a calf strain, and Drew Smyly is on the 60-day DL. Let me ask you guys a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the plane on Sunday, going home, and there was a lady. I was like, let's say I was in row 20, and I was on the aisle. She was in row 21, and she was on the other aisle. So we're very close, but she's a row behind me. And she's doing a crossword puzzle, and she's asking her husband for help. And she says, blank Desmond, or baseball's blank Desmond, 3-time silver slugger. Do I turn around and tell her the answer, or do I just mind my business?
I'd probably mind my business. I find this sort of thing, you know, kind of a different scenario being on an airplane with what you presume aren't baseball fans. But I find myself in a similar situation all the time at baseball games, hearing conversations around me where I know what they're saying is
always
just flat out
people.
Wrong.
You do
always.
Correct people?
You do?
Always.
Oh, I never do.
You know, there's a couple of reasons, but the main reason is I find that I often end up sitting within earshot of someone that is trying to explain the game of baseball to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Only that person apparently needs no explanation, and they just talk about the stupidest things, and I get really annoyed.
I get annoyed too.
If you correct them a couple times, they usually talk quiet enough to where you can't hear them anymore.
A couple
but then
times,
you look like
wow.
a complete butthole.
Yeah, you
I'm
are
never going
jerk.
To see them again. And really, yeah, but... I may look like a butthole to them. I don't to everyone else sitting around me. I'm a hero.
You're a hero.
I don't know that that's true.
That's awesome.
They should be allowed to enjoy the baseball game
they
with
can.
The people they came to with it.
Yep.
All right, let's do
dumb
some
thoughts to yourself.
Some quick. It's so frustrating when people are saying dumb things at sporting events. Well, let's do some quick lineup stuff here. I'm going to give you a lineup thing, and you just give me your quick reaction. Ben Zobrist sat. Javier Baez played second base.
Just trying to get everybody involved.
I don't know. I don't know that this. I mean, because Baez was already involved. He started opening day. I started to feel this way as we got later in draft season that maybe Ben Zobrist was actually going to be the one who suffered the most here after, you know, assuming it'd be Baez and maybe Schwarber. I don't know. I think everybody will suffer a little, but Zobrist may be one who suffers the most. And if that's the case, second base being deep as it is, he may not be a viable mixed league starter all year. Just have to wait and see.
Almora made a leaping catch to take away a home run in center field. And you know they like his defense. So, okay, we'll keep an eye on that. Tyler Saladino led off for the White Sox. The great Saladino, he led off for the White Sox. He went 2-for-4 with 2 singles and a walk.
I think that matters.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I mean, I'm not probably adding Saladino in your normal league, but I kind of tried to write waiver wire with a bit of a deep league tilt today, and Saladino was definitely one of the guys I mentioned, just 13% owned.
Wow, where is Chris Towers when you need him? He's laughing at all of us for laughing at him about Saladino. Corey Dickerson sat against a lefty. Steven Souza led off. Okay, well, hopefully that doesn't happen every time there's a lefty for Dickerson's purposes. With a lefty, we talked about this one. With a lefty on the hill against Milwaukee, Keon Broxton batted second. Eric Thames sat. Jesus Aguilar started at first base, and Shaw was at third. So Heath already talked about that. Hernan Perez, 2 games down. He has not started yet. Jerod Dyson batted ninth again against a righty. And Mitch Haniger batted second again and doubled, but also struck out 3 times. So, yeah, that was interesting. That Dyson, short leash if he keeps batting ninth. Okay, he's still going to steal some bases, but we obviously want him batting higher in the order.
Not short leash for the Mariners, short leash for my fantasy team.
Yeah. Okay. Evan Gattis DH'd, Gurriel sat for Marwin Gonzalez, and now Houston, by the way, is going to face 4 lefties in a row, and just reading what Hinch said, it doesn't seem like they're going to play matchups that much. They're going to let some lefties play against lefties. We'll see what happens, but 4 lefties in a row. But I don't like Gurriel sitting in the second game of the year.
No, but...
It's only the second game.
I mean, he's one of the more replaceable parts in that lineup, right? You'd have to think.
Well, I mean, from fantasy owner's perspective, I think some people still have hope that he could be a sleeper.
I got a tweet last night. Somebody said they just dropped Gurriel for Travis Shaw. How do you feel about that?
I think that's deserved.
I think I feel like I would keep Gurriel if it were a bench spot and I was just going for like star upside. But if it was someone I was starting, I would rather have Shaw.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
I love it.
I think I actually made this change even before I saw Houston's lineup yesterday. I was working on rankings yesterday, and I moved Gurriel behind Shaw. Actually, I moved Shaw ahead of Gurriel, to be technical. But
all right. Let's see. David Peralta batted second against the righty yesterday. Okay, great. And Delino DeShields sat again. So Rua went 0-for-3. Profar sat. I still think DeShields is going to be the best man for the job.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the Rangers, considering your other two options are 0-for-7, I think the Rangers will discover that soon as well. But it's really dependent on DeShields. He has to perform when he gets the chance.
Yeah, he'll face Salazar today, most likely. They face Kluber and Carrasco, so give him a little bit of slack there. And Jock Peterson sat against the lefty, guys.
Oh, what? What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Get good, everybody involved.
Chris
all
was
the
all
kids
excited
play.
About Saladino. Now he can be sad about something.
Yeah.
Happy.
We won't make too much of it yet, but that wasn't good. Let's look at the rest of yesterday's action. Brian McCann hit a solo home run to opposite field yesterday, and apparently this is something he had been working on during the offseason. McCann recognized he had become a Deadpool hitter over the last two seasons, wanted to go opposite field, hits an opposite field home run.
Was it really a last two seasons thing? Because I've always viewed McCann as one of the biggest victims of the hyper infield shifting going on. Once that started, he went from being like a 280, 290 hitter to a 230 hitter. And that started even before he joined the Yankees. So I'm going to look at it now. Yeah, his pull percentage was at its highest, particularly his last two seasons with the Yankees.
That's what happens
but
in Yankee Stadium.
But he's always been an extreme pull hitter.
Yeah, that's what happens, though. McCann, I can find the quote. A lot of work went into this offseason with my swing to be able to do that. Over the last 2 years, I'd just become a dead pull hitter, and I put a lot of hours in the cage for that swing right there. I was waiting for it to translate into a real game, so it was nice for it to pay off tonight.
It was one of his five batted balls that has gone the opposite way.
Okay.
The other four he's pulled.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know.
But something. Who was it that hit an opposite? Was it Moustakas last year that hit like his first opposite field homer?
Of his career?
Yeah. And then he did it a few times, right?
Yes.
And then got hurt.
It's been an encouraging start for Brian McCann. I was probably the lowest on him and really thought Evan Gattis was just better. Does not seem like the Astros believe that at all, and unless something changes, I'm going to look pretty silly for that.
Yeah, we'll see. Jake Lamb homered off Johnny Cueto, so just keep mashing righties and do something against lefties. Nick Castellanos and Travis Shaw both had good games. All right, who do you like better? Castellanos 78% owned, Shaw's 48% owned.
I like Shaw.
Honestly, flip a coin. I think I probably have Castellanos ranked higher because there's a better track record there, I feel like, but could go either way.
Joey Gallo, I'm not going to do it every time, but I'll do it this time. Gallo, 28% owned, hit the crap out of the ball, hit a home run. He also made an error at third base.
When he does something well, you could do it.
He did. He homered,
that
yeah.
Ball so far.
How far was it?
It was like 440 feet or something.
Okay. So the 600 foot you put in the notes is an exaggeration.
A slight exaggeration.
I feel like I would have heard about that.
Now, it was a beautiful, majestic home run. Here's my question with Gallo. Do you think if all of the outfielders struggle, when Beltre comes back, Gallo could move to left field if he does well?
I mean, he has to not struggle himself. And although a home run, and I think he has a stolen base too, it's nice. He struck out twice each game.
Yeah.
I've got a confession to make about the Gallo home run, and you can tell me if it makes me a bad parent or not. We watch baseball a lot at my house through the evening, and Lucas, my 7-year-old, sitting on the couch with me, and the app was just a little bit ahead of what we were watching, and I knew that Gallo hit a home run, and I said, hey, watch this. He's getting ready to crush this ball, and he hit it like 600 feet, and I didn't admit to Lucas how I knew.
No, I think that you're like, I know based on the conversation we just had about how you correct people and you consider yourself a hero for doing so.
Right.
You want to be a hero in the eyes of your son.
Right,
so
sure.
I don't blame you. That was a great move.
Build that up to mythical status.
You should do that with the lottery, like DVR the lottery and be like, I bet you it's going to be, and then guess it right.
And then he wonders why you guys aren't rich.
Why I didn't play the numbers. That
yeah.
Seemed pretty lame, actually.
Yeah, I guess so. And then deep leagues, Mark Reynolds and Jed Lowry are off to good starts. Reynolds has two doubles and a home run. And Lowry almost hit for the cycle last night. He was robbed of what probably would have been a triple by a diving catch. And he's 5-for-9. They're both owned in less than 10% of leagues, Reynolds and Lowry. Any thoughts?
They're there.
Scott and I disagree on Reynolds, I think, but I feel like in a roto league, Mark Reynolds is probably better and going to be better for the next month than somebody that you're currently starting.
Well, he was the Rockies starting first baseman last year, and he wasn't a highly started player at all. So I'm not sure why we'd have a different reaction to him now. Like,
and he hit a good average last year, right? But not a lot of power? Wasn't it like bizarro,
right.
Mark Reynolds?
He became less of a fly ball hitter while everyone else in the world is going the other way.
And he wasn't playing consistently, was he?
He was...
like, wasn't he playing like 4 days a week or something? Maybe
there
I'm
may have been stretches where he was, but he was... like he was the Rockies' first baseman.
I mean,
I can't even think of who else played there. Sometimes I guess Parra did late in the year. He played there some. But
to put it in perspective, in my five leagues, and you guys are in a lot more than I am. The only league I'd consider Mark Reynolds is our 16-team league.
And that's the only league where I remember picking him up off waivers at any point last year, and that was only because my team was terrible.
Okay, let's talk about pitchers. From yesterday, and then we're going to get to grade the trade and your emails in a little bit. Justin Verlander, awesome. Jose Quintana, terrible. Three home runs allowed, three walks, just a terrible start for him. Quintana, last April, by the way, had a 1.47 ERA and did not give up a home run in five starts. Anything to say with Verlander and Quintana, who went head-to-head yesterday?
Quintana didn't allow his third home run last year until his 13th start, which sounds all scary. But his home run per nine was 1.0 for the season. He had a couple three-homer games after that, so it's probably no big deal.
All right, Carrasco we talked about. Cueto, let's do Cueto. Cueto gave up two home runs at Arizona. He did have 17 swinging strikes. And I don't know if this is an excuse, but he gave up two runs in the bottom of the fifth inning. In the top of the fifth inning, apparently he like raced home to score a run. So I'm just going to say he was gassed. Sure, why not?
Sure. I don't think there's anything to worry about here.
Arrieta had a good start. He did only throw 55 strikes on 90 pitches, but one unearned run over six innings at St. Louis with six Ks. Okay, great. These three guys, the aspiring aces, were not so good yesterday. Kenta Maeda gave up three runs in five innings on six hits. Sean Manaea gave up four runs in six innings on five hits. He did have 15 swinging strikes, though, against the Angels. And Matt Shoemaker was okay. Five innings, two runs, three walks, four strikeouts, and 16 swinging strikes. And he gave up two pretty hard-hit home runs.
I wonder how many of those swinging strikes for Shoemaker were fouls, because it did seem like he had a hard time putting hitters away as I was watching that game. He got a lot of two-strike counts from my recollection. I'm not going to cite any numbers here because I'm not looking at any, but he seemed to have a hard time putting hitters away.
But swinging strikes and fouls are not combined, right? They're separate.
I believe that it depends on which site you're looking at. Whiff rate does not include fouls, but swinging strike, technically a foul ball is a swinging strike.
Interesting. Yeah, because I was looking at the swinging strike data on, I don't want to name websites here because I don't want to talk trash, and it looked high to me, and Baseball Reference hadn't been updated yet, so... yeah, I don't know. I wasn't really... you watched that game. I watched like three innings. I was not impressed with Shoemaker. He just didn't look... he didn't look like anything special to me.
Oh, you don't say, Adam. You don't say.
Wow. Oh, yeah, because you didn't like him coming into the year.
No, I mean, his strike... like, he had this two-month stretch in the middle of last season when he first started emphasizing the splitter to the extent he does now, where his swing strike totals were off the charts and he was getting a lot of strikeouts, and then he just stopped getting the strikeouts. Like, it seemed to me a clear case of catch the league by surprise. Oh no, the league's not surprised anymore.
By the way,
that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad pitcher, but he'll probably be pretty average.
Okay, Baseball Reference has him, it is updated now, 14 swinging strikes, and that is defined as strikes due to a swing and miss. So he got a lot of them. I didn't notice it. Maybe it happened later in the game. But that's good, right? I mean, he and Manaea had a ton of swinging strikes.
It's good, but kind of what Heath was saying, I mean, if he doesn't have, like, that put-away pitch because, you know, he emphasizes the one pitch so much. Like, I don't play in a swinging strikes league. I don't know if you do.
I do, yeah. I play in a few of them. Yeah.
We got some breaking news.
Okay.
it sounds like the White Sox and Tigers have been postponed today.
Oh, really?
So are they more valuable, like, heading into next week because they're gonna, both teams are going to have two more games than everybody else left?
No, they already made up one.
Oh, they're only going to have one more game than everybody else.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And do we know when the is scheduled for?
We have,
is this a joke that's not going well for you?
Yes.
Okay.
We have more breaking news. Team Kreeth has added Mark Reynolds 3 minutes ago.
I wonder which half of Team Kreeth did that.
Dropping Andrew Kashner. Good for you. all right, let's finish up here. These fringy starting pitchers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I mention something about Now I don't remember who it was. I wanted to mention about one of the pitchers who was just on a long list here. Never mind. If I think of it, I'll bring it up later.
Okay. Fringy starting pitchers. Now, I included two guys who are very owned, Jake Odorizzi and Hisashi Ibukuma, because I believe that we consider them to be sort of plug-and-play, pitch and ditch, whatever. We call them fringy, which isn't really a word, starting pitchers. Jake Odorizzi had a bad start against the Yankees. Would have been a quality start if not for a double by Matt Holliday that was only a double because it got lost up in the ceiling. Hisashi Iwakuma had 6 innings, 2 runs at Houston, but only 2 strikeouts, and he gave up 2 homers. Patrick Corbin was bad, and CC Sabathia was good, but only 2 strikeouts at Tampa Bay. He's pitching Sunday. He's actually a 2-star pitcher this week, and Sabathia is 46% owned. Odorizzi, Iwakuma, Corbin, Sabathia, did anybody excite you last night?
Somebody excited Scott, and it was not on this list, but he just remembered who it was, and then he tried to circle them on his... We've talked often about Scott's notes that he comes in with for the show, and his pen is out of ink, so I think we should let Scott talk about this before he forgets it again.
It's kind of an engraved circle here. So, yeah, going back to Kit Domeda, he left after 5 innings and only 75 pitches in a start where he had given up 3 earned runs, so it's not like he was dominating, but it still seemed like an early hook, right? Given that it was the Padres, given that he was pitching well enough to get a 6th inning, you'd think. I'm kind of, early in draft prep season, I was not loving Maeda as much as the consensus because I thought, he just showed he was a 5-inning pitcher last year, and if that's the case, it doesn't matter what the ratios are. He's just not going to be good enough. And then he talked about, I'm going to go 200 innings this year, so I kind of came around to him.
Because
this
he said that?
Not a good
that?
First sign.
But why, you know... Why would you even care about him saying that? Everybody says they want to pitch. You know, everybody has these lofty goals.
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have. I don't know if there was maybe a Dave Roberts quote in the same article or not. I just remember the Maeda quote. But you're right. Maybe I was too willing to believe him because I didn't like being on an island over Maeda.
Back to the fringy starting pitchers that you mentioned earlier. Odorizzi at 93% owned seems a little bit strong to me, but I understand he's a guy that you're going to keep on your bench and just use on 2 start weeks or at home. I was somewhat encouraged by the fact that Iwakuma wasn't awful.
Yeah.
I have this fear, because I think if he's just average on that team, he could throw 200 innings and win another 14 or 15 games and be valuable.
But it's like you were kind of down on Dallas Keuchel yesterday. He had 7 scoreless innings and only had 4 strikeouts. Iwakuma had 2 strikeouts against the Astros.
I did not say he was good. I said he wasn't awful. And there's a little difference between Keuchel, who's a borderline top 30 pitcher to some people, and Iwakuma, who were arguing if he should be 83% owned or not.
Yeah, I know.
I'll add that I think CC Sabathia is a little underrated.
I was thinking he was over-owned. What's Clayton Richards' ownership?
Well, that's about a 20%. Good point. 46% ownership is probably... I don't know that it really needs to go higher than that.
Well, Sabathia is probably owned in that many leagues because of the 2-start week, this current week, week one. Are you okay dropping him for another 2-start pitcher in week two?
Yes.
Yeah, no. I mean, standard mixed league scenario. Maybe I just... I think the perception about Sabathia is kind of like where it is with Jared Weaver. Like, he's done. He used to be great, but there's nothing left. And I think there's something left. I think he can be usable in 2 start weeks, like 46% of users decided he was.
He's got Bartolo Colon upside.
Okay.
I think it's a good way, right?
Yeah, pretty close. Sure.
Five players stole a base yesterday. Chase Headley, AJ Pollock, Jacoby Jones, Manuel Margot, and Trevor Story.
Scott, during the broadcast, they said that Trevor Story intends on stealing more bases this year and would like to get to 15 or 20. So he wants it.
Sign me up. 15 steals for Story.
Man, you watched a lot of that Rockies game.
I mostly watched, like, if there's not a Royals game on, I want to watch Miller Park.
Okay. And three players were caught stealing yesterday. George Springer was caught stealing twice. He was 9 for 19 last year, but it is encouraging that he's running because he said during the offseason, kind of hinted he's not going to run that much.
Yeah, but now is he going to be discouraged?
Maybe.
Is that already over?
Yeah, I don't know. Lindor got caught and Rajay Davis got caught. It's time to grade your trade. Scott from Colorado. Remember, a C is average. Anything higher than a C, you won the trade.
Great inflation, man. Everybody expects to get A's.
Give Paul Goldschmidt. Get Jose Abreu, Jose Bautista, and Tony Watson.
If you made this trade, it would be a D.
Really?
Don't like it.
Yeah. Can I plug something I'm writing during this segment?
You at least just say that Chris is writing it?
Sure. My trade values trade chart will be coming out today with values for every player. And I feel like sometimes it overvalues the three side of a 3-for-1. But even in this trade, it says, no, don't do it. So no. I would give it a D minus.
Ah. I'm impressed that you came up with a trade chart that would properly show quantity not making up for quality, as in this case.
Well, it doesn't always.
Yeah, I would say if you're in a deeper league where there are like no closers available, I don't think this is that bad of a trade, getting Abreu, Bautista, and Watson for Goldschmidt.
I mean, unless they say, like, if this is just a flat, well, it's obviously not an NL-only league because they're mixed players, but like I'm just always going to assume it's a standard mixed league unless they say otherwise because I don't know.
Okay, yeah, good point.
Can't get bogged down in that.
From Mark and KC, 10-team head-to-head categories Dynasty League with 25-man rosters. Give Jonathan Scope, get Troy Tulowitzki.
I'll give it a C+. I think the shortstop is a little more valuable than the second baseman.
Yeah, I think I have no excitement over this trade at all, but I'm going to go B-.
This is from Brad. Grade the trade, Maverick, Goose, Iceman, and Viper. It's a
really movie that did not hold up well.
Terrible movie. Oh, it is terrible. And I can say that because I didn't see it until, like, I don't know, 5 years ago. I'd never seen Top Gun. It's a bad movie.
I probably watched it 40 times as a kid. It was one of my favorite movies, and I didn't watch it, and then I wanted to share it with my kids last year, and it's been ruined.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's not very good, no.
Give up Corey Seager and Cespedes. Corey Seager and Cespedes for Chris Bryant.
That's too much to give up, I think.
You think?
That wasn't
a sarcastic, you think. I'm honestly on the fence here.
Like the trade chart says it's way too much to give up. But yeah. I think it's too much because Seager's probably not going to be. Oh, wait. I just saw the keeper values. It's definitely too much to give up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about
that. Yeah. I mean, Seager was a borderline first rounder himself, but I mean he's not Bryant. I'll give it. I'd rather have Seager and Cespedes unless it's like a super shallow league, but he didn't say that, so I'll give it a C-.
I'm giving it a D+.
This is Rob from New Jersey. Give up Carlos Correa, get Anthony Rizzo.
That sounds like a pretty solid
C+.
B to me, maybe B+.
What? I'm going C+.
B+, Scott. They're not that far apart, Correa and Rizzo, are they?
I think the difference between a undisputed first round hitter and, you know, kind of a questionable second round hitter, I think it's pretty big.
Okay. From Matt, grade the trade. It's a 14-team, 6x6 categories league with OBP plus slugging instead of batting average. Give Rich Hill and Stephen Piscotty. Give up Rich Hill and Stephen Piscotty. Get Jared Eichhoff and Matt Carpenter. So you downgrade from Hill to Eichhoff, you upgrade from Piscotty to Carpenter. It's a tough one, 14-team league.
I don't think it's tough. I'll give it a B, like Carpenter, in that format especially.
Yeah, I like it. I'm going to go B-.
Okay. This is from Steve. Grade the trade. Okay, fine. I currently have Jake Lamb at third base, and Manaea is my number five starting pitcher. Give up Manaea, get Michael Franco.
That's kind of maybe like a C+. It's pretty even.
Okay,
I'm gonna give it a B-.
We finished the show with your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Kuel in Virginia, dear TJ, Vince, Mikey, and Gus. This is something called Recess.
Yeah, it was a Saturday morning cartoon, a little past our time.
Oh, okay. First time ever doing FAB for free agents, free agent acquisition budget, FAB. What are your guiding principles and resources you use in determining how much to bid so not to under or overbid? For example, how much would you bid for, say, Daniel Hudson or Sean Doolittle in a 14-team, 28-player head-to-head categories league? $2 at most. you don't want to waste FAB on guys that you're not sure about, you know?
No, I really don't. I think for Hudson, I might put in a $0 bid.
Yeah.
I'm not really
assuming
that...
your league has $0 bids, which some don't.
Okay, if they don't, then I guess I would use a 1%.
The vast majority of all the bids you're going to put in are probably going to be whatever the minimum is, because there's going to be a couple handfuls of players maybe over the course of the season that you know it's going to be a fight to get them, and you want to really preserve the dollars for that. The guys you're just kind of halfway interested in picking up and you can live without, those are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, I'm going to
give
you
$1 a dozen.
I'm going to give you some of the FAB values that we've seen in our FAB league. And, okay, so Heath wasted, unfortunately, $12 on Coda Glover on April 2nd. Yeah, that was a tough one. Out of 100. But it didn't seem like a high bid at the time when we thought Glover was going to be the closer. Danny Valencia went for 8. I think we all sort of thought that was too much. Charlie Morton and Andrew Tolles went for $4. Again, I think that's a little high.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Matt Bush went for $4. Like, no, you can't do that. Not for a setup man. You probably get him for $1 or $0.
I think it makes a difference, too, if you're talking about FAB that runs daily versus FAB that runs weekly. You have to be much more cautious with your FAB dollars when it runs weekly, because you know every Sunday night it's going to be a competition with everybody in the league for every player you might want. If it runs daily, I think you can go a little overboard for a player you really, really want, because there's not going to be a lot of activity every day of the week, and you can get the more in-demand players more cheaply than you can in a weekly FAB league.
Recently, I got Gerardo Parra, Jason Hamill, Francisco Cervelli, all for $0. Let's see. Mark Reynolds went for $0. See who did. Jason Grilli I had to get for $5. That was probably pretty stupid. Brandon Finnegan, $0 to Heath. Matt Boyd, $0 to Mike. So, yeah, you don't have to, yeah, a guy like Doolittle or Hudson, you don't want to spend more than $1, I'd say. It's 14-team league, so you gotta be a little more aggressive, probably. There aren't going to be that many guys on waivers that you like. James said, I'm wondering how are you going to focus on daily this year? I don't know how much we're going to focus on daily this year. It's a good question. We'll try when we have time on shows to do it, but, you know, more people play seasonal. But, you know, we'll talk about the draft app. That'll be one thing. That's a pretty cool app as well. You should look into that if you're not playing FanDuel and DraftKings, or even if you are. We'll do a little daily.
I'm trying to, at the very least, tweet through it on a semi-regular basis. So I'm not writing a daily piece. We're not going to have a daily podcast, but you can follow us on Twitter and we'll have a conversation.
Andy in Albuquerque, Genmar Gomez or Santiago Casilla?
Casilla.
Hector Neris.
Dalton from Paris, Illinois. In my utility spot today, should I start Castellanos against James Shields or Starling Marte against Chris Sale?
I would start Starling Marte.
I told him to start Castellanos.
Okay.
Break the tie, Heath.
Marte.
Okay. James Shields gave up 40 home runs last year, so there's that.
Yeah, there is that. It's just, did you draft Starling Marte to sit him?
Yeah, he's James Shields. I understand. It wasn't an easy call for me. That's it for today's show. Thank you for listening, everybody. We're back tomorrow with much more. We got 15 games today. We should have plenty to talk about on Thursday's show. See you later.